evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, August 27, 2014. Rebels of the SPLM in opposition deny signing the ceasefire matrix in Addis Ababa.
We did not sign the matrix. What we sign is a dedication, rededication to a document that we don't know. They talk of a matrix, they talk of addendum. They talk of addendum to matrix.
And South Sudan's parliament calls for the removal of the Lek state governor after one MP says there is a mass killing there.
The perpetrators of this mass crime must be brought to book. An investigation to be set by the government to find out the source of supply of weapons to the civil population.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But we first go to Addis Ababa for the latest. There is some confusion over whether or not the opposition signed the blueprint called the Matrix for implementing the seven-month-old cessation of hostility agreement. The Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, which has spent 8 months brokering the South Sudanese peace talks, says in a statement that it welcomes the signing of the matrix by both sides into the conflict. IGAD says the long-awaited signing means the cessation of hostility agreement that was signed in January 23rd will finally be put into action, and quote, the guns will be silent and the senseless conflict in South Sudan will end. But Taban Dengai, the chief negotiator for the opposition at the talks in Addis Ababa, says no one from his side signed the agreement to implement the January cessation of hostility deal.
Actually, we did not sign the matrix. What we sign is a dedication, rededication to a document that we don't know. They talk of matrix, they talk of addendum. They talk of addendum to matrix.
The government lead negotiator, Nyal Deng Nyal, says the opposition did indeed sign the matrix.
And they did not sign it behind closed doors. It was signed in front of the whole world with media there and in front of the leaders of IGAD. So they did sign the implementation matrix.
Nyal says the question now is
whether they'll abide by it or not.
Under the terms of the matrix, both sides are required to immediately freeze their positions and begin to disengage and separate their forces with the assistance of the verification by the IGAD Joint Technical Committee and the ceasefire monitoring team, IGAD says. IGAD says ending the fighting is key to building trust and confidence between the government and the opposition so that multi-party talks to bring the lasting peace to South Sudan can go ahead. Those talks are due to adjourn tomorrow for consultation. They will resume on September 13th. The Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs is demanding an immediate investigation into the UN helicopter which crashed in Bentiu, killing three Russian crew members. One crew survived with injuries. MSF says the injured member of the crew has been transferred to UNMISS health facility. South Sudan Army spokesman accused rebels of the SPLM in opposition of shooting down the UN plane on Tuesday. Rebel spokesman Kong Lul Roy denies shooting down the UNMISS plane.
No, those are baseless lies manufactured by Colonel Philip Aguero. Our forces are not responsible for bringing down the UNMISS chopper in Bentiu. We do not have presence in the area where the chopper came down. It is the government that is in control of that area. Our military do not have the capability to bring down a plane. We do not have that capability at all.
That's rebel spokesman Kong Lul Roy. The audio of Kong Lul was obtained from James Shimanyola in Nairobi. South Sudan's parliament this week approved a motion calling for the removal of Lek state governor Chut Matur Dhol from power. As Waki Simon Wood reports from Juba, the call comes after three South Sudanese ministers appeared before the parliament yesterday to answer questions about insecurity and what legislators describe as anarchy in Lek state.
The citizens of Lek State have been subjected to mass killings, according to legislator Zakaria Matur, who introduced the motion. He says, for example, in the past 3 months alone, more than 500 people were indiscriminately killed. Matur says they included policemen, teachers, students, and even children. Parliament approved the motion after hearing from the national ministers of the Interior, Defense, and Security. Member of Parliament Daniel Dengmon did says he supports the motion introduced last week by Matur calling for the removal of Governor Duol and other action to restore security in Lake State.
Right, Honourable Speaker, thank you for giving me this chance to move this motion that let this House terminate the debate and pass the recommendation of the mover.
Yes, now, I also, Honourable Speaker Charles Maja, to second the motion, which is so important. And so it has to go as the first mover and the last motion mover that has to go with all those recommendations which have been spoken here, in particular that of the Minister of National Security.
Parliament unanimously approved the recommendations to declare a state of emergency and to deploy more police and security forces in Lake State. The House also called for the rejuvenation of a peace and reconciliation program in the state. Security Minister Isaac Mamur Mete, describing the indiscriminate killings of people in the state as a mass crime, says more must be done.
The perpetrators of this mass crime must be brought to book. An investigation to be set by the government to find out the source of supply of weapons to the civil population is in possession.
Mamur says criminals must be apprehended and appear in a court of law.
We should take charge of things. If Mamur is a criminal, he has to be brought to justice, whether he's the son of a devil or a son of a king. Why do you treat other people on kid gloves and treat other people on iron gloves? Why? We are all black in this South Sudan. Criminal is a criminal.
Parliament's opposition leader, Onyote Adigo, also backs the resolutions to remove the Lake State governor, to disarm civilians, and to beef up security in the region. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Odu in Juba.
South Sudanese people living in Kampala say free speech and other democratic principles have deteriorated rapidly in their country since the violence erupted last December. We have several reports for you today on the work of civil society in South Sudan, beginning with Bonifacio Taban.
A group of South Sudanese who fled to neighboring Uganda during the ongoing crisis said certain government officials have deliberately misinterpreted what democracy stands for in South Sudan. Sudan Guy Majok is a South Sudanese student. He studied for his Master in Public Administration at St. Lawrence University in Uganda. Majok said he sees no sign of democracy in a country like South Sudan.
You know, many people in South Sudan believe that democracy is only about elections. Elections is one element of democracy. There are a lot of things that you would have done as a democratically elected president. You have to build roads. You have to bring them services. You have to, you know, you have to give them things that they want as a government elected by them. But that never happened.
Things like paved road, school, hospital, and electricity are nearly non-existent across much of South Sudan. Nyaduel Teresa Bauer is a South Sudanese choir director at the Ugandan Catholic Church. She said, in order for a free speech in South Sudan, there must be a true democratic form of government, which she said does not exist today.
To have a freedom of speech in South Sudan, we need a good leader which will allow everything for his or her people to do, like freedom of worship God, freedom of anything.
Majuk said democracy means governance for the people, by the people.
As far as democracy is concerned, democracy as it is defined, it is the rule of the majority, respecting the rights of the minority. In some other definitions, it also means having a transparent government, having an accountable government, a government elected by the people, and it is a government for the people and by the people. That is what democracy is all about.
Majuk said the media has never been free in South Sudan. He said government officials and security force routinely harass and abuse journalists who have devoted their time to educating the masses about democracy and what is happening in the countries.
You have been hearing, you know, the current Minister for Information and Broadcasting, Mr. Makwei, have been threatening journalists. It is very unfortunate that we have the media law in place, but still we behave like people who have never gone to school, people who do not know what is happening. Media is not actually free anyway. There are a lot of things we know about it. And we cannot talk a lot about it.
Goigadia, another South Sudanese student at Makere University, describes South Sudan as a country ruled by a dictator. She said unless people are given the freedom to express their thought publicly, there is no democracy in South Sudan.
For me, I don't think that the dictatorship government that is ruling the country with the iron fist cannot grant freedom of expression and speech to the people unless posting or publishing what has been infected by the government. Otherwise, censorship of the government is controlling all the system of media in the country. So I don't think that the people are going to secure the freedom of expression unless and otherwise if there is a change of system and governance.
But some South Sudanese here in Kampala said freedom of speech is not as easy to grant in Africa as it is in the West. They say some African countries are driven by tendencies of dictatorship, making it difficult for free democracies.
That was our reporter, Bonifacio Taban. Meanwhile, in Jonglei State, civil society groups are working with ethnic communities affected by the current crisis. But they say because of lack of financial support, they are not able to reach the grassroots. Jacob Achek has more from Juba.
Last month, church-based group and women group organized meeting between the two ethnic communities of Dinga and Nuer in hope of easing tension and urging the communities to reconcile with each other. The National Platform for Peace and Reconciliation this month sponsored a community-based peace process in Jonglei State with Dinga and Nuer church leaders taking the lead in mediating the talk. The sole objective of initiative is to foster peaceful coexistence between the Dinga and Nuer. Ali Rago, the deputy chairperson of Traditional Authorities Leadership Commission, says civil society groups hold the roadmap to eradicating conflict among the ethnic communities.
We have the roadmap. If they are mistaken, we go and tell them. We even participated in the selection of chiefs, head chiefs, executive chiefs, and even the sub-chiefs. We try to go in and tell them the roadmap so that they don't conflict themselves.
The governance manager, John Manyangjok, said members of several communities-based organizations only received training in urban centers set up in hotel, but they never reached the communities that need their help.
They only receive training in the towns, and that training always end up at the dining tables and never reach the community because there is no resources allocated for them to implement the activities that they expect to be doing for the community.
Jonglei State artist Gan Jamu said Jonglei civil society group are in a touch sports.
Civil society don't go to the grassroots. They only do the activities in the urban areas. And they don't reach there. So the real community that is in need of sanitization are not rich.
The Jonglei Civil Society Group, an independent youth organization which monitored the disarmament campaign in the first half of 2012, also reunified more than 100 abducted children and women with their families in the state. A key founder of Jonglei State Civil Society Group and the leader of its key projects team in Jonglei State, Fis Karban, late Carbino Colin Dolo, was later killed by David Yao Yao's South Sudan Democratic Movement, Cobra Faction in Pibor County, in 2013. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Juba.
Many civil society groups in South Sudan are only based in the country's big towns. Mungume Debs Rakarenji reports from Juba that South Sudanese who live in the countryside are often unaware that these groups exist and that they are there to help them fight for their rights.
Asato Ellen Lolyong is a UN Population Fund Youth Fellow. She says the messages of civil society groups often do not make it outside of South Sudan's urban centers.
Sometimes we get stuck on the towns, especially in Juba, but they don't go to the grassroots to find out what do the people want and how can they relay that message to the leaders and even to the UN and non-governmental organizations.
She says South Sudanese civil society groups need to rethink the way they reach ordinary citizens.
And a lot of people don't know their rights, not because they're ignorant, but because there's no awareness. So on the surface, some people know in the towns, but once you go down to the Boma Payam, to the villages, they're just living a different life and nobody's reaching to them. We need to come from the bottom up.
Lack of access to people outside urban centers is just one of the problems facing civil society groups. Paleki Matthew, the executive director of the South Sudan's Women Empowerment Network NGO, which advocates for women's rights, says civil society groups need better access to information and to be guaranteed their right to free speech. If they are given a free rein, civil society groups can play a key role in solving many of the challenges South Sudan is facing, she says.
I have faith in civil society in South Sudan. Regardless of whatever fractions or divisions that we have now, I think we can overcome these challenges and these divisions. Because if it was not for the civil society before 2005, maybe the peace agreement would not have been signed in 2005.
Local and international NGOs were instrumental in making the comprehensive peace agreement that ended a 20-year civil war between the SPLA and the Khartoum government a reality, Matthew says. NGOs, including faith-based groups, have also been leading the effort to bring unity and reconciliation to the country. After more than 8 months of conflict, Matthew says ensuring freedom of expression for everyone is key to ending the conflict. She wants the government to pass a law that guarantees free speech.
There has to be legislation in place, and a good legislation, not just any legislation, to allow individuals, the media, and everybody to air their opinion, basically.
Since the conflict started in December, 7 newspapers have had their print runs confiscated by security operatives, radio stations have been shut down, and journalists have been detained and harassed. Catholic Radio Network's Bakita FM is still off the air, more than a week after it was shut down by national security agents for allegedly saying in a report that government troops started recent fighting in Bentiu. Human rights organizations and the United Nations have also said the employees and activists have been threatened during the conflict. South Sudan's transitional constitution guarantees every citizen the right to free speech and access to information. Presidential spokesman Ateny Awek Ateny says it is up to South Sudanese to defend those rights.
Even myself, when I was writing, I received threats from individuals, but which I never said is government doing that. But I have never succumbed to. My freedom of expression, I have never given it up to anybody. So it is up to any person who is doing something also to insist that this is my right.
For VOA News, I am Mugumedes Ruakarinj in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Nigerian school officials question the need to cancel school in the effort to contain the Ebola outbreak. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what does freedom of expression mean to you?
Freedom of expression means the way a person expresses himself or herself without fear. That's what it means.
Freedom of expression to me means being able to say whatever it is that comes to my mind, provided that I do not disrespect the person who's next to me.
Freedom of expression to me, it means that I should have a chance of expressing my views. Why do I feel like this can bring a change to the community? So I think freedom of expression is just having a chance to express what I think is right.
Well, freedom of expression means being free, being myself, wearing what I want, dancing in the street, and just being myself without anybody controlling me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. As the Nigerian government delays opening schools nationwide in an effort to prevent the spread of Ebola, some education officials are baffled. Heather Murdoch has more for VOA from Abuja.
It's still the summer holiday for most children in Nigeria. Schools were set to start opening beginning next week. But Nigerian officials announced Tuesday that classes won't resume until October 13th at the earliest. For some education professionals, the caution is welcome. More than 1,400 people have died of Ebola in West Africa this year. And although only 5 of the victims were in Nigeria, many people are deeply afraid. Rose Calton, a senior member of the union that represents public school teachers in Kaduna State, says the school delay is part of the Nigerian government's well-praised rapid response to the Ebola crisis that began here in July.
It's very welcome, and we want to appreciate them for that. And we should not think this thing will affect the education of our children. It won't. It will help us, and it will help our children too.
But some parents are angry, saying it makes no sense to keep schools closed. Ramatu Tijani, a mother, says people will still pack into churches, mosques, and markets, and children will be just as exposed.
places whereby your fellow citizens do their daily activities. But in this regard, when it comes to Ebola now, government announcing that children don't go to school, you want them to become dumb.
Other education professionals say keeping schools closed is unnecessary and illogical. Private school owner Murtala Muhammad says the government seems to be contradicting itself, assuring Nigerians the Ebola threat is all but past on the same day it announces that schools will not open.
If this is something to be taken serious, then tension of school commencement of a session should not be on the basis of Ebola anymore.
The bigger problem Nigerian schools face, he says, is neglect and insecurity. Nigerian schools are being dragged down by lack of resources, long teacher strikes, and declining attendance, he says. Boko Haram insurgents, who have killed hundreds of schoolchildren in their schoolhouses and kidnapped hundreds more, have driven some parents to keep their children at home. Conversely, he adds, declining education is fueling the insurgency.
All the crises happening today, from issue of kidnapping to insurgency and all of you, when you look at it, it's traceable to lack of education. If somebody is not properly educated, it cannot be productive, and therefore he will become a nuisance to the society.
Nigerian officials hope Ebola will be out of Nigeria entirely sometime in September, if current efforts remain successful. However, with the disease still spreading rapidly in Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia, officials say Ebola still threatens Nigeria and the entire region. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Abuja.
And there is a word today that the virus continues to spread in parts of Sierra Leone. The international group Action Aid reports 120 new cases of Ebola were diagnosed in the last 5 days. Mohamed Sela, director for Action Aid in Sierra Leone, says one big reason for the continued spread of the Ebola is lack of health facilities for people in remote areas. He tells VOA Kim Lewis that people with symptoms of the virus are still hiding.
Ebola is still spreading. We are still recording new cases, and it's very, very scary. We are all scared and confused as to why the numbers are still increasing. The last 5 days alone, we have got over 120 positive new cases. So it's not going down at all. It's definitely the numbers are still increasing.
Are healthcare workers still getting infected?
We have scenarios of two international health workers. One is from the UK, who was working in one of the treatment centers in Kenema, got infected and has been airlifted to the UK. The other, we understand, is a Senegalese that was working for the WHO at the laboratory they had in Kailaun, which is the epicenter. So he also got infected with the virus, and I think they have also flown him out. And because of that latest infection in Kailaun, the WHO laboratory has even stopped working, and they have pulled out all the staff from the laboratory in Kailaun.
Do you all know how this WHO worker became infected?
No, actually, we don't know. There's not much information around it. There was a statement out that he got infected. But he is actually one of the epidemiologists working in the laboratory where they are analyzing the samples. Not like actually dealing with people, but dealing with the blood samples of infected people.
Are people still afraid to go to healthcare facilities?
Well, generally, people are going. I think one of the things I would say that has happened over the period is that due to the lockdown and the quarantining, you have scenarios of people now actually treating their neighbors who are sick and are refusing to go to hospital. And we have got more new cases going to hospitals. And in some cases, the major disadvantage is that many of the private hospitals have decided to close down because they also do not have the expertise to screen out who is an Ebola victim. And so to keep safe, I think most of them have decided to shut down.
You all were campaigning, doing radio and television, information services for people, as well as going door to door. How are these campaigns working?
Well, it's been going far so far. We are continuing with our door to door, which is for me the only distinguishing thing about what we are doing compared to our other colleagues. Because we are based in the community and we are still going around. And we have still not recorded any positive cases within our own direct community. For Connaught, which is actually sandwiched by Kenema, by Kailaun, and even Guinea that's infected, up to now they have only reported one confirmed case. It's because we've been there since June doing the door-to-door sensitization and which we are continuing. Unfortunately for Mo, which is another big area that we targeted before, They have recorded positive cases for the township, but we have still not recorded positive cases within our sponsorship communities where we operate as ActionAid. So that we still can say it's a good campaign that has been working to actually keep people safe. The bylaws have also been set at village level, which is also helping to monitor the inflow of visitors from outside that are coming into this community.
What is being done to determine what is causing the spread of Ebola in other areas in Sierra Leone?
Well, I know we still have big challenge in terms of logistics. Logistics in the sense that we have limited number of ambulances, and the issue is that we still have only two testing centers. So all the other hospitals do not have the capacity. So when a patient comes in with the similar symptoms of fever or vomiting and frequent stool, the persons are usually treated until the blood samples come, which often take 3 to 4 days or even 5 days before the results come. So in that interval period, there is the likelihood that the nurses who are treating those patients whose results have not yet come out will become positive. And people are therefore scared now to go to hospitals where you have Ebola people admitted in separate wards just because of the fear that nurses dealing with them might also be dealing with the other non-Ebola patients. And in those intervals, we still have scenarios of people hiding and running away while they are in that transition period waiting for their results to come out.
That was Mohammed Sela. He spoke with VOA's Kim Lewis from Freetown. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. The United Nations says mass atrocities continue to take place in the war in Syria with the continuous influx of foreign fighters and the rise in power of extremist groups. The UN Commission of Inquiry on Syria reports highlights the effects the conflict is having on the region, saying the impact is no longer confined to Syrian territory. Ukraine says more Russian soldiers have crossed the border into the country. The Ukrainian military says 5 Russian armored infantry carriers and a truck entered a small town in eastern Ukraine. The development follows the Kremlin's acknowledgement that Russian soldiers were detained Monday in Ukrainian territory, but it says they crossed the border by accident. And finally, Israel and the Palestinians have agreed on a new open-ended Gaza ceasefire after 50 days of fighting in the Mediterranean enclave run by Hamas militants. The truce took effect last evening. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Dudu by Sultan Clinton. We have been listening to Sultan Clinton with that song, Dudu. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. Tune in again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.